Welcome to Crafts and Crime. I'm Amy.
Oh, I'm Elaine.
And as always, we have a craft and a crime.
Show enough.
I was like, you're going to say anything?
I was trying to think of it. Instead of change it up. I was trying to change something exciting or agreeable.
Suspenseful pause. Dun, dun,
dun. Pause for effect. Like grew.
Or like Mojo Jojo.
Oh my god.
I still can't believe I did that.
Welcome to Crafts and Crime. I'm Mojo Jojo.
I knew I was going to do it because it's just anytime I hear Jojo, the way you say it, Mojo Jojo, Mojo Jojo is the same as, what was it? Watch Mojo?
Yes.
Yeah, Watch Mojo. I knew it because I kept saying it. On accident. Yeah. And I was like, I'm totally going to do that. And I was just like, really just in.
That's okay.
It, like, oh, I'm just going to go. Like, I was in it. And then I was like, oh, shit, I did it. But yeah.
I get it.
We had a good laugh about that. And then I wanted to hate myself. No, you know what? I know I told you. I don't think I told you in person what happened, but when I was talking about, you know, going and getting blood work done and all of that, and I had to pick up a prescription because, like, with my stomach issue, I had to do, like, you know, the, we talked about it last time, the you know, Teladoc thing. So it was like a video. Ooh, excuse me. So I could tell her, like, it hurts right here, not over here. Nope, it's not my appendix. Nope, it's not my gallbladder.
Yeah, they're like, jam your fingers into your stomach. Does it hurt?
Push here. Does it hurt? No, it hurts here. Push over here. Does it hurt? No, it hurts here.
Yep. Like, they're like, we got to make sure it's not anything else.
It's not your appendix. It's not this or that. Yeah. So it was like none of that. And then the blood work still like rule out that it's not liver, kidneys, you know, all that. Or, you know, infection. And so anyways, so we go. And Jack had to get his blood work done too. So we went to the one over here, and it's really nice. It's small, but
really,
not
the one?
The one down, yeah, over by
That's
the Walgreens.
Okay.
And you would think because people, and the phlebotomist was like, yeah, a lot of people just don't want to come over here.
It looks real hood.
It does, but it's not. It's all new. It's really nice. So the lab, so we go and check in.
You'll have to tell me what the name of it is.
Yeah. And so, later. Well, it's through my insurance.
Oh.
It's through Kaiser. So it's specifically to Kaiser.
I gotcha.
I should have prefaced that. So if you have Kaiser, like, go in the little ones. It's nice because usually they're new or newer ones.
Oh, okay. I know where that is then.
Yeah,
I've
yeah.
Seen
it's
it.
Over by the Walgreens over there. So, so anyways, so she was like, yeah, a lot of people don't want to come here. Well, what was funny is there's the one, the not the hospital Kaiser, but then there's the other one, you know, like a couple cities over that I usually go to. And it's a medium sized one. So you usually have a wait. And, you know, anybody that knows, it just sucks when you're sitting for blood work, especially if you're like, you got to pee, you know, you give a urine sample and you're like, I'm holding it for 20 minutes.
Seriously.
Or if you're fasting and you're just like, I'm dying, I want to eat. So I didn't fast. But anyways, so we check in and then she's like, okay, go on back, you know, to module 6 or whatever it was. And so we go back and there's nobody there. Mm-hmm. And it's literally like the screen, empty chairs and my name, like, ready.
Nice.
And so I just go up, get my blood work done, and then Jack's next. And so I was like, I sat down and I was waiting for him. And then I was like, oh, wait, I forgot I have a prescription, you know, for all my stomach medicine. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I'm going to go and pick up my prescription. So here's the thing. If anyone has any stomach issues, especially if you've dealt with like stomach ulcer or any like IBS, any of that, I was not in a good place. I was not comfortable. I did not look great. And I was so bloated.
Oh, my God.
So bloated.
Yeah.
It's bad because it was all the stomach acids. It was bad. I normally don't look like that. But I was sick. And so I go and I get my... I can't. So I'm holding this bag in front of me. It's like a paper bag. So I'm holding a paper bag in front of me. And I go up to the... You know, she's like, I can help you over here. And I'm like, oh, I have a prescription to pick up. And, you know, they're like, you know, clack, 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 clack on their computer. And she looks up and she's like, how far along are you?
Lord, help me.
I was like, I immediately, without a beat, I just was like, oh, I'm not. I'm sick. And she was like, oh, I'm so sorry. I know. She felt horrible.
Yeah. She's going to think of that shit for the rest of her life.
Exactly.
You will just too, never assume. But just at least you weren't her.
I know. I'm like, whatever. I know. I probably did look like 2 months, 3 months pregnant.
I had a little like oh, my stomach bit. Hurts so bad. I look 6 months bloated.
Yes.
Because it hurts. It's yeah. so legit.
So I was so sick. I was so bloated. I mean, my face was puffy. Everything was puffy, including my like stomach was a little puffy. But I'm like, don't assume someone's pregnant.
That's so rude. Like,
no, I'm sick.
Never in your life ever
I
should
don't look
you.
Like that now. I'm like,
that is like the so craziest, rudest thing. I can't believe someone would say.
I know. I was like, my face is hot thinking about it. But yeah, so somebody thought I was pregnant and I'm not. No, we're never again.
I guarantee not having another one. She will never ask anyone again.
Right. I'm like, who knows? She could have been new, but there was like one, there was a pharmacist next to her. And I know she was probably like, oh no, like, why did you say that?
Freaking secondhand embarrassment. Yeah.
So then the worst part is, because the pharmacy's in the front by the door. And so I'm waiting for Jack to finish with his blood work and walk up. And so I'm just standing there. I like walked away from the window and there's like, you know, the little waiting room with chairs. Mm-hmm. But then it's like in between the front desk and the pharmacy, there's just like chairs. And so I'm standing there and Jack comes out of the hallway, you know, down the hallway. Uh-huh. And he sees me. And he kind of gives me a face because I'm just like mortified.
Oh, no.
And then he's like, what's wrong? I'm like, and I just shake my head and we walk outside and I told him what happened. He starts busting up laughing.
What a dick.
And he's like, I'm not laughing at you. It's just kind of funny. Like, yeah, for you. It's not like you would ever in your life. How far along are you?
Yeah.
So Avery was like, you should have said like, oh, I'm 9 months along with a food baby. But I was like, no, I'm legitimately just sick. Like, you know, I don't look like this in a normal day.
And it really sucks because like, yeah, that shit'll just stick forever. But yeah, just have comfort in the fact knowing that will traumatize her forever. Yeah.
And I feel bad, but I'm like, well, maybe she'll learn.
She'll learn.
Like,
that's so inappropriate.
I'm not obviously pregnant. And I think for a lot of women, it's like, you know, women carry it differently. And in the beginning, you never assume because it's like, that could just be like, I got IBS and I'm a little bloated today. Or, you know, it could be health issues. You never want to assume. I usually will ask someone, oh, how far along are you? When they are actually visibly like 8 or 9 months pregnant, like huge. And you're like, that's a baby in there. That's not a tumor. That's not, you know, it's like
your best Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And they're in, you know,
it's
like,
not a tumor.
It's not a tumor. It's a baby.
Just a baby.
Just a baby. So yeah, but so I hope all you guys are having a better better time than me.
Lord.
Apparently I look pregnant for a few days.
My foot still really hurts. Mm-hmm. I know you guys just heard me complaining about it, but it's because we record like back to back and you know, yeah. So y'all hear me bitch about it for
yeah.
a while.
It's a different it really day, but yeah, sucks. Same issues.
Yeah, it hurts and I'm gimping around still, but I'm all right. It'll be fine. I'm
yeah.
just like, it's getting to the point where it's like really hurts, but it really looks better.
Mm-hmm. It's a tail end. Usually it feels worse before it gets better.
But it's so itchy.
Oh, yeah.
Which I know healing. Is good, but yeah. it's driving me insane. Mm-hmm. I haven't felt itching like this since I had my leg tattoo heal because
it was a big surface.
My gosh. It was bad. I kept I was so lucky because Kurt and I were just talking about like when you have a broken bone. I've never had a broken bone that needed to be casted.
Uh-huh.
And he was laughing. He's like, yeah, you know, and then the doctor takes off the cast and like plastic forks and stuff fall out because it like, and I was like, oh my God, that sounds terrible. But
yeah.
But I had my story and I told him and because he doesn't have any tattoos. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, but yeah, my husband doesn't have any tattoos.
Neither does mine.
And we do.
We do. We have all the tattoos and piercings. Yeah. Although Jack used to have piercings, but
yeah, Kurt did too. He used to have his labret pierced, but I don't remember why he took it out. Work? Yeah. I don't remember. I can't remember.
Jack had his eyebrow pierced in his ear. Yeah,
hilarious.
You know, early 2000s,
oh my
late
God,
90s,
right?
early 2000s.
So, the only experience I have close to that was that when I had my tattoo, it's the whole left side of my calf. It. Well, while it was healing, it was so itchy, and uh-huh. I had one of those snappy hair clips, uh-huh. the quilt clips, and so I had snapped it open, and like the little or thinner bit on it, uh-huh. you know, and I'm scratching around the border and being really careful, hook right into the scab. It was the worst. It was brutal. And the thing was, it didn't even hurt that bad, but if you don't know, like ripping the scab off can actually rip the ink out
yeah,
and
yeah.
make it really splotchy and ugly.
Yeah, that
so it was more
wrist.
So that oh, it's
some of this. That's why this is all faded, is because look at how it like creases.
Yeah.
And so it would like, I'd sleep. I should have wrapped it more.
Also, stuff that's
wrist.
Really delicate ends up having spottier like, issues because the liner needles are usually used. So
this is one I want to get covered up. This is actually a cover up.
I want to get covered up again.
Yeah.
I get it.
So I got a couple I want to cover up. But
I think that one will cover
this
up really
one
good.
This one was itchy. On my right forearm on the inside, I have a tattoo. I got it last summer with Sandro. I mean, he didn't get the same one. My nephew, he got like a lightning bolt on his neck and his shoulder. And man, that looked painful.
Oh, it was
and
so red.
It's like, oh, it was so red.
But I think he got sunburned, though. Remember?
Oh, yeah.
We were
he got sunburned.
Where did they go? The baseball game? No.
Camping.
Yes. Overnight.
Camping. Yeah. And it was.
Poor Sandro.
Yeah. It was the altitude and then the sun. And so he got sunburned and then got his tattoo. And so it was a little red and it was sensitive. You know, that, like, think about it. It went up to, like, his, like,
jawbone.
Almost his jawbone. Yeah. So, oh, like, God. Up by his
vibrating
ear.
Off his collarbone.
Yeah. And his collarbone. He's so skinny. So it's like that collarbone. It's like, ooh, he said that hurt a lot.
Oh, but, God. I can't even imagine. Yeah. So. Oh, that'd be so close to your bone. There's so
much. Yeah. It was, like, on.
Because
he's
there.
So skinny and it's like over his bone. Yeah, I'll have to show you the picture again because, but anyway, so he got his done, but I got mine done first because mine was like small. And so mine is just the word stay with Morse code underneath. And it's like, I think I can't remember if I talked about it on the podcast before, but
yeah, but not everybody's listening right from the beginning.
Yeah, so if anybody knows the movie Interstellar, it's kind of a, it's from there. And so it's Murphy's telling her dad to stay and then just watch the movie. It's like one of my favorites. It's my go-to movie if I need to cry. but she's telling her dad to stay and not go on the mission. And then, like, in, you know, this time shift thing, he figures out the Morse code. She figures out the Morse code and it's her dad telling himself to stay. I get goosebumps. I'm going to cry. And so anyways, it's special to me because, you know, I cry about that every time because my dad passed away when I was young and I used to wake up every morning. And of course, as you know, any little girl, like, Daddy, stay home. And the
just
day
don't
that,
go to work today.
Yeah. And the day that my dad passed away, he was in a car accident on his way to work. And on that day, I didn't wake up. And my mom said that she didn't either. And she always did, too. So it was just like crazy how that one day I didn't ask him to stay. So I think that's another reason why that movie makes me cry. But yeah. Anyway, speaking of tattoos, so I have this. It's about, what, 6 inches long? Is that about six? Yeah. It's about 6 inches long, right? Five?
Yeah.
I'm like, have you seen the ones where they're like,
remember
stop
your measurement
six?
Issues?
Yes, I have bad measurement issues. Really bad. Don't look at the blinds or curtains in my house. It's really bad. Shut up.
I'm not gonna say that.
I don't look at measurements. I'm but really
that's
bad.
Like,
but
it's probably
not
like
about
5 inches.
I'm like, how long is my pointer finger?
And about an inch wide.
Yeah. Is that an inch? Okay, I trust you. I'm like, it's like
it's about an inch.
My middle finger width.
Basically an inch is this right here between you have longer fingers than I, but most people it's still about an inch because it's the lower one that ends up being the longest gap. So pretty much you can measure it that way.
Oh well, it's not.
We should get
big,
those little finger inch tattoos.
Yes,
I know
that.
They fade really fast, but like, dude, just always
finger.
Get it
right here.
Inch.
Measure this, bitch.
Yo, we're gonna
we're
do
doing
it.
Today, right? Today, well,
right
we're gonna
now.
Do it today, right now.
I bet that'd be so cheap.
I know. We can't go to that place because his minimum's like $60.
Oh,
or
that's
like
right,
that.
George.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. So we gotta find somewhere. We're like, we just need some measurements on our middle finger. Oh my God, I want to. We're gonna do it so bad. We're gonna do it. We're gonna do it so bad.
So bad.
Yeah, and then I can't. No, then I can't say I can't measure. Could you measure me at IKEA? Let me measure this with my middle finger. Wait.
Dude.
Two middle fingers?
You're going to have to remind me of this later. It's not something I want to say on there. This seems so inappropriate, but it's just a...
I'm just holding up middle fingers.
Between.
Wait, I'm like, is that my middle
measurements.
Finger?
Yeah.
As measurements.
I'll have to tell you later.
But anyways, I'm really bad with measurements. All of that to say, this itch... roundabout because it's so thin. It's
all
so
y'all
thin.
Just took a ride on the ADHD train.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
So with all that to say, I can't measure. I have a tattoo and
it was
really
itchy.
Because it's real thin. It's real thin.
I think he used a liner the whole time, which is only one needle.
It's just, it's a line. So it's STAY spaced. And then underneath it is, you know, for S, there's the three dots. And T, it's the dash. And then A is the dot dash. And then Y is dash, dot, dash, dash.
Yeah.
So it's all of that. And it's kind of spaced. And it's real thin, real small. Well, not small, you know, but it's spaced out. So the lines and the dots are real small. So it was almost like, you know, when you get a little paper cut or a cat scratch or something, like the thin little ones.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Oh my gosh, it itches so bad.
And it stings in a different way than like a larger tattoo feels like a huge pressured bruise.
Uh-huh.
And I can't imagine something like that. It probably is so stingy because it's tiny little slices.
Yes,
you
it
end
is.
Up getting cut. Those liner needles are basically, just cutting. And so I mean, obviously it's not, but it's such a wound in such a sharp line that it's got to be.
Yeah, it's like tiny. Like the bigger, my bigger tattoos, like the one on my back, like that didn't hurt, like that when it healed.
Oh, that's cool.
But it's like the tiny ones, like this really bothered me. So yeah, it was all itchy, but I'm like, where were we going with this?
I don't know. Filler? But
no, we're totally going to. This one.
The inch tattoo. Seriously. Yeah. Measure this shit, bitch.
Yeah.
Plus, also, it's hidden when you close your finger. Yeah, so yeah. No one's going to see it because your index and your ring will cover it. Yeah. Whereas, like, my thumb, it would show on the outside. My index finger on this side, it would show. And that would be silly to try to do it on that side. Well, I think
if I'm looking and measuring, I could totally, like, what? How long is that?
Like, just measure inch. We just have two freaking middle finger rulers. And then you go like that, love it's it. Like 6 inches.
I know. We'll do it. I'm like, how long is
and
a
dollar bill?
And
these are going to be so not permanent. They'll probably be gone in like...
How long is a dollar bill?
A year. I think like 6.5 inches. 6 inches?
Okay, there you go. So 6 inches. Or my middle,
I'm pretty sure.
My middle fingers are the put together are the length of a dollar bill.
Nice.
Yeah, they are. Okay, now I can't say it. Oh, I can't measure. Look at that. It's totally.
Nice.
Okay, so now all of our listeners know my two middle fingers put together is the length of a dollar bill. Yeah. I'm totally. That's so. There's just the little lines. Oh, and then they're going to itch so bad. I know.
But
more,
the thing
more
is,
tiny lines.
Seriously, they are not going to last. So that's kind of, it's going to be funny and they'll last for like a year. And then if we want to get it redone.
I don't know because this is a year old.
It's because
not going anywhere.
But think of washing your hands like this.
True.
Like that, your fingers. Oh, we're always
see,
in the
see, I'm just like with tattoos and like piercings and stuff. Well, you're more like, you have more piercings than me as far as like in your nose.
In my face.
In your nose, but I have more in my ears.
Yeah.
I think we balance out.
I have
6 total. Because three on each ear. You have your...
I think my ears are stretched to like 16 millimeters.
Mm-hmm.
And
then you got
like,
one, two,
it's pretty
three,
much like
three four.
Quarters of an inch. And then
so where
I have
piercings.
A septum, both nostrils and my lip.
Uh-huh.
But I don't wear the lip one a lot because it like fucks up my silly bad words.
Yeah.
Don't say bad words behind me.
So yeah.
So it hurts my teeth. But yeah, my
one,
ears
two,
are only
three, four,
pierced.
Five, six. You have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We're the same.
Yeah. Well, you're gonna have to get your ears pierced again then, because I totally have to get mine done again.
Can I fit a fourth?
You totally could. You could get like a little tiny one in this soft tissue up there.
Yeah.
But yeah, because
I have enough room.
I always tell myself that I'm not gonna stretch these more, and then I probably will. So I need to just put it up higher, like a second one up higher.
Yeah.
So that I have room, because that's what happened. I had my ears pierced 3 times, and then when I stretched my bottom ones, it forced the other two shut. It literally squished them shut, and because I wasn't wearing earrings in them, because it's so irritated and swollen when it happens when you're stretching it. So yeah, I was like it's fine, whatever, I let it go.
Yeah.
And I really don't think I'm gonna stretch these any bigger, and if I do, like, I will actually taper off at like a full 3/4 inch, because that sounds big, but it's like a double A battery, I think. Maybe I know it sounds crazy, but I do have a limit of what I don't think looks personally attractive for my own body.
You know.
And so anyway, wow.
Yeah, sorry, we've
was
been
almost,
talking a lot.
But
lately.
Also, the thing too is like I was like, dude, my craft is the shortest I've ever done.
Yeah.
And I was laughing because I told you, like, I literally just have a couple things like as notes, because the rest is
that's fine.
So it's
kind
short.
Of good
it's
coming
so
off of our really long episode.
Yeah, it's really, really short.
I'm so surprised. Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
I'm ready.
I want to preface this by saying it just happens to have a heavily religious historical background. It is what it is. A lot of the things we talk about do, but like
most things,
it's just
do.
As they're like, I'll get into a story because that's the history of it. That's it.
Okay.
So it's a biblical Catholic story.
Okay.
But my craft is rose petal beads.
Rose petal beads.
Yes. Anything familiar at all?
No.
No? Okay. So rose petal beads originated through Catholicism. But, you know, as a lot of us know, they're not the only religion to have ever used prayer beads.
Mm-hmm.
But specifically, the rosary ended up not being a meditative type of thing. It was a...
Like ritual type
it was
thing.
Like a
prayer
sit
ritual,
down
like,
and... Exactly. Yeah. So, pretty much to the best of our knowledge, actually, a rosary, as people are known to know it, hasn't been around that long. The story is that Saint Dominic, he's needing help because there is another religion that is, you know, distracting from the Catholic faith. And, mm-hmm. you know, everybody feels like they want to help people the way they think so. Uh-huh. So in his mind, he doesn't want this religion to come through. So he gets down on his knees and he's praying. And the angels come from the heavens, and then eventually Mary, it comes to him.
Mm-hmm.
And she explains to him what needs to be done, the type of prayer he needs to spread. And she places a garland, a crown is what they call it, but it's a garland, can you imagine, of 100 roses and 10 lilies.
Okay.
And this is what we know to be, it was a rosary.
Okay.
And so then he took the prayer, which was the Hail Mary, and, mm-hmm. And they changed it, though, because that wasn't really a thing. It was a very added on, accumulated thing over time.
Okay.
But this was in about 1100 AD. Okay. So pretty young, technically. Uh-huh. From, I mean, that's younger than I thought, it's not for sure.
BC.
Yeah, obviously.
Yeah.
It couldn't be before Christ.
So, well, I mean, like, it's not the old.
No. Yeah. It's ancient, but not in the same way. So even for me, I thought that was really, really interesting. I mm-hmm. was raised Catholic, but I just never stayed with the faith. I don't have anything against mm-hmm. it. I just found my own way, and everybody's way is fine.
Mm-hmm.
So the way that the necklace ended up being divided up is just because of different sets of prayers you do. So it would be 10 beads for the Hail Mary, and then an Our Father, and so it's segments of 10. So it's still the 100 and the 10. Uh-huh. But there are very shortened versions of it.
Mm-hmm.
So if anybody's wondering, each of the 10 individual beads correlates to a story that they call a mystery. It's kind of interesting. So it's like the joyful mysteries, the sorrowful mysteries, and holy moly, sorry, Jesus. I can't remember the third one. But
oh, horrible Catholic.
I know. But my mom's screaming at me. She knows it. She's like, Elaine, I just heard it at my great uncle's funeral last year. And it's beautiful, but it takes a very long time. It ends up being like an hour long prayer.
Ugh.
And I've done it one time in my life, and it was for catechism, which is it's like Sunday school for Catholics. Uh-huh. So little kids go and they learn, and that's what they have to do to make their communion.
Oh, yeah.
And it's fun. And I have my original rosary, but it broke because I did used to wear it, and mm-hmm. It busted, and I was so sad. So I like got all the pieces.
You got
and
put it all back. Though, right?
Yeah. But it's like busted in a little cup,
mm-hmm.
like the little cup that came with my communion. So specifically, the word bead actually in English is derived from Old English for like a bede, which meant prayer.
Okay.
And so anyway, they started because of the story of the roses and the lilies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing roses ended up turning out better than the lilies did. So mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you how to make the beads. And I'm totally going to do, we're going to do this. It's absolutely anything anyone can do, but it's going to be tricky. And I'm going to have to go to the flower warehouse.
We'll just wait for your one little rose twig like have a flower.
I could make not even a whole bead.
Okay.
So, there is not really a recipe because it all is different depending on the time of season, the roses, how plump were they of water.
Mm-hmm.
But the general rule of thumb is you need about 16 quarts of roses.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking because we got that 2-quart little jug for like Gatorade or lemonade.
Yep.
And that's like, I can't imagine.
I know.
Like,
it really is crazy.
8 of those.
So, the kind of bits and bobs that I pulled around, one of them that I'm referencing is from another artisan. Her name is Michelle Skeen.
Okay.
And so this is a little bit that she had said. In her experience, it takes about 2 to 6 roses each bead.
That's crazy. So you can't even make a whole bead with your rose twig.
No, I couldn't. So I would probably go to, my mother-in-law used to be a florist, so I know mm-hmm. she knows one that we could go to. I just need to go, because there's ones around town, a floral uh-huh. warehouse, and because they're pretty cheap there.
Mm-hmm.
So 2 to 6 roses, will make about one bead. It depends on how large you want to make it. So if we're going to want to do a small bead that I'm showing you is maybe about six, No, that's not right. 10 millimeters, I bet. I know, right?
Use my middle finger.
10 millimeters, I'm going to say. A P.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's a standard size rosary bead. Uh-huh. So two roses. So here's the recipe.
Okay. Roses.
The way they used roses. Yeah. And that's it.
Really?
Yes. So back in the day, I'm guessing the way that this would be done was it's very laborious because just like the paper, one bad step and everything goes to mold. Mm. So...
Well, yeah, because you're using organic material. Mm-hmm.
And that only.
Yeah.
So you take the roses and you just need the petals. You don't take the hip. You don't take the stamen, nothing. Mm-hmm. Just the rose petals. And they would grind them down, chop them and grind them into a paste. Then that paste is taken. Nothing else is added at all. That paste is taken and it is added to some type of cooking vessel.
Okay.
And it is just cooked until it turns into powdered clay, basically.
Oh.
That is it. It's literally it.
That's easy enough.
But it has to be done very gently. And we could totally do it with... It just has to be something that's, like, monitored, like an electric, like, kettle warmer or something like mm-hmm. that. Where we... like, she took... it was 3 days. So like there is a way we will figure it out safely because okay. she has a kettle that she left like on her stove for 3 days.
So my thought is because I was literally just talking to you today about the lemons because we were outside getting the lemons and I was like, oh, I want to dehydrate yeah. some. Do you think you could just put some in a dehydrator to like dry them out because then it turns to powder and you just like grind it up in a mortar pestle?
I don't know because I think it has to have the structural fiber completely broken down through heat and cooking. So, yeah, she, like she said, she has like an electric kettle warmer with a like a pot. So I'm thinking because mm-hmm. I'm thinking it's like an electric griddle is what uh-huh. she's talking about. Something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But
the little dollar store camping pot or something. Yeah, I'm thinking
we could just get like a hot plate.
Yeah.
And that's the safest, most general. We'll have to do it at my house. The kids don't burn their fingers off. But yeah, just I'm thinking like a hot plate uh-huh. and a pot that does not have the Teflon because that'll burn the house down yeah. with the heat. So it's just, yeah, stainless steel or cast iron. She uses cast iron.
Yeah.
I don't own any. And
I
so
have a lot of cast iron.
And obviously you couldn't use a ton of it because that would conduct so much heat. It will burn.
Yeah.
So you're poking it and you're going to feel like the mushy clay type of texture. And that's when you know it's done. So it is all hit and miss depending on like what breed of rose did you use that has water. You have to eyeball it. There's no, yeah. that's it.
So then you just take that and what reconstitute mm-hmm. it with water
and so
to then make like a
it's
going to
be, it's, you're going to cook it down. And when you check it, it's going to be clay texture.
Oh, it's so it's going to be mushy
and it will be pretty almost black, but not burnt black. It's this beautiful deep and black. Like it shouldn't be burnt, like, and it will smell like roses still. There are some rosaries throughout history that are over 300 years old that still smell like
that's
roses
crazy.
Because when it warms up on your body, it does. And the only thing you can add if you want to is like a couple drops of rose essential oil or I would never use that oh my gosh, what is it called? Oh, there's that fancy oil. It's like the most expensive rose oil on the planet. And it's like really popular in India because it takes this crazy distilling. It's like insane. Anyway, but yeah, so you can add that if you'd like to extend the scent. And if you wait too long and you try to poke the hole, you'll crush your bead. If you wait way too long, you'll have to drill it through. And so it's just a feely like, moment of rolling the ball. And you could pin it through. There are like polymer clay and ceramics. There are these bead skewers and they're very, very thin. And you put them up on a little rack so that the beads don't misshape. But that is for cooking or firing. These just have to air dry and you cannot use anything to dry them faster.
Oh,
or so the outside will dry and the inside will get rotten.
Yeah.
So it's such a like. It seriously is all just by just do it.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, it'll be trying an error. And I'm thinking we'll probably just get, I don't know, maybe a bouquet of roses like, that are like the $10 or $15
yeah,
ones.
Yeah, Costco has
and
some
maybe make,
ones.
I'm like, we'll get like a bracelet maybe.
Yeah. That'd be
but,
so cool.
Yeah. And it's beautiful. And I heard that actually one of the best parts is that your own, which is like kind of grody, but still cool, is like your own natural body oils add like what they call like a patina. And it's you're going to be your own scent. So every bead is going to be different. It'll smell different over time.
That's cool.
I own a antique ebony wood carved rosary, because there were some that are different. There's different charms that are inside of the middle, like I call it, when you're all done with the rosary at the bottom. They're not always a crucifix at the bottom. So sometimes there's one, it's called the Eucharist. It's like the cup. And then there will be like, you know, you could have a Mother Mary or the crucifix or stuff. So I have one that is just a very large cross. It looks like it probably was a nun's. Huge, and it's like stamped from Italy, and it's beautiful, and it's probably from like 1830.
Wow,
and it smells so good.
Yeah,
it smells like a church, like wooden pews and incense, and it's like,
that's cool.
It's beautiful. But yeah, so that's it.
Cool. I want to make it now.
We're totally gonna.
I know. I had. Well, I told you I just pulled out a bunch of stuff from the hall closet of like all the school stuff, and I'm like, I have so many projects we could do.
Yeah.
And I'm like, add that to the list.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't. We. I should say we, not me. Well, technically me, because me and Jack live together. We have. Not your grandma's rosary, but her Bible.
Oh, that's cute.
I think I know where it is in the garage because we had it out to show, I think, Jack's dad. After this, we'll go. It's in one of two places from what I remember. So we'll go look, but I think we have, it's like the old, big, huge Bible. But
my mom has one that's gigantic. It's like gilded.
Yeah, that's kind of how this is. It's crazy. I'm like, whoa. I'm like,
oh, I wonder if it matches my mom's. What if they're twins?
Maybe. We'll go look, and then you can send a picture to your mom and say, like, does that look like this? Or, you know, send me a picture of yours. But okay, well, that was really interesting. Now I want to do that. So
we totally will. We will do it.
We will. Okay, now I don't even want to do my crime because it's sad. Like, we've been having so much fun.
But that's what the shit's about.
I know, I'm sorry. It's like, it sucks, but okay. So this is...
Sorry we didn't name it Crimes and Crafts.
I know.
But it's alphabetical.
Yeah. Oh, is it?
Yes.
Oh, it is.
Oh, precious.
I didn't think of it that way.
I didn't either.
Just thought like, oh, we do crafts while we watch crimes. Well, watch crimes. Watch crimes happen in the streets. No.
We just have to walk sometimes. A couple blocks.
I know. No, we just got to look across the street.
Oh, my God.
And that trash can got lit on fire. Oh, my God. There's a lot of crazy stuff happens around here.
Oh, man.
No, I put it together as like, oh, well, I do my crafts while I watch like crime shows or whatever, or listen to a crime podcast, but... Yeah, so unfortunately, I do need to bring it way down. And now I had heard of this. I didn't know all the details. I can't remember. Like, it was probably a clip on like Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, something. And so I had heard of this. And so I decided, like, I'm going to do the whole thing to get all the details because it was interesting to me. So this is the murder of Sheila Bellish. So this takes place. Yeah. So this takes place back in 1997. Excuse me. So on November 7th, 1997, in Sarasota, Florida, 13-year-old Stevie Bellish, she was on her way home from school, and she's like really excited to tell her mom about this boy at school who's like gonna ask her out. She's all excited, and so she's walking home. She gets, you know, home, but she realizes something's not right. Like right away. All four of her younger siblings, they are 23-month-old quadruplets.
Whoa.
Yeah. So all four of them were alone at home crying. Like, they're all freaking out crying. Oh, I have goosebumps. God. Look at my legs.
Yeah,
I hate
toddlers,
this so much. Yeah, because like, 23 months old, they're going to be two in a month, you know. So they're these little babies, quadruplets. They're crying. And then she notices some of them had blood in their hair. And on their body.
Oh,
so
no.
She's like, oh my gosh, but they don't look to be harmed. They have, I look at my legs. I hate this so much.
Yeah.
I just think these poor babies. So there's nothing on them. They're not hurt. And so she's like, where's mom? Like, where is she? What happened? Because she's not here. They're all freaking out, crying. And so her mom is 35-year-old Sheila Bellish. And she knows there's no way mom would have just left all four of these babies at home alone.
Yeah.
So she's like trying to comfort her siblings, like, it's okay, it's okay. And she starts looking around the house for her mom. She goes into the kitchen and she finds her mother laying on the floor in a pool of blood that was already starting to dry.
Oh, wow.
So she,
the babies were like starving and dirty and probably like,
I have like all over my arms and my legs full chills. I hate this so much, but I just think of those poor babies. So she immediately, you know, Stevie calls 911 and she's telling the dispatcher her mom's dead. There's blood everywhere. And she's like, my mom has a cut on her neck and like she's gone. And so paramedics and the sheriff's department are immediately sent out to the house. And while they're waiting, she's still on 911 waiting for first responders to arrive. And the dispatcher is like trying to talk to Stevie to get more information on like what is going on. Like, what do you think may have happened? What does the scene look like? You know, so she says she can see blood going from the laundry room all the way into the kitchen. Now, I'm in the crime scene photos. It kind of looks similar to like my layout where, you know, from my house, you walk in the back door and there's the whole laundry room. Mm-hmm. And then
I don't know.
Yeah. No, you know.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you walk in the back door and the crime scene photos look very similar to like my layout. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm sure a lot of you guys might have a similar layout where you walk it kind of like you. Your laundry room is off your kitchen, yeah, too. And so there's blood leading from the laundry room into the kitchen, like a trail. And so she also tells the dispatcher that her little brothers and sisters are in the house and, you know, they're all wearing life vests. So she tells the dispatchers, she's like, she put the life vest on the little ones when she changed one of their diapers so that they didn't wander off into the backyard and drown in the pool.
Oh.
Because they had a pool in the backyard.
That's very smart. That is
such a genius move.
Just in case, because you got to take a shower or something.
Moms of multiples get creative because you can lock a door, but all it takes is like a kid figuring out how to go out of, like Lily going out her bedroom window today. Like, what the heck? The kids are creative, even at two, you know, almost two. So she would put life vests on them in case they wandered out of her sight. I guess she regularly did this with Stevie's. Like, she obviously was, you know, home with the kids and putting the life vests on so they didn't wander off. I didn't look to see if all four of them were wearing life vests or if three of them were and one of them wasn't. I'm sure all four of them were because she was probably doing laundry, housework. It's just like, don't go out of my sight.
I love that. It's so funny, but I love it.
It's so creative and smart.
It's the easiest way to guarantee that's not going to happen.
You're in survival mode of, I got to keep these four babies alive. Don't drown in the pool. You're wearing a life vest for right? today. I got some stuff to do.
You know, like, they're not going to be like, I don't want to.
No, it's like part of the routine. Yeah. It's these little like life vests so on them. Cute. And I think they were probably like the zipper ones or what. They obviously didn't show the babies, you know, and what they were exactly wearing. So anyway, she's telling the dispatcher, like, obviously my mom had, you know, she was doing stuff around the house, changing diapers, they all have their life vests on there, you got blood on them, there's blood going from the laundry room into the kitchen, and my mom's, you know, dead on the floor. So first responders finally arrive at the scene and they determine that Sheila had been dead for hours. So immediately all the children are taken outside to the ambulance, scene secured. And now at this time they're trying to find Sheila's husband, Jamie Bellish, which is why when you were talking about your crime last, I'm like, you had a Jamie, I had a Jamie. It's crazy. So her husband's name is Jamie Bellish, James Bellish, but they call him Jamie. He's a pharmaceutical salesman. Now, keep in mind, this is 1997.
Yeah.
He's probably out doing his like stops and stuff. They can't get a hold of him right away.
Sorry, my landlord's husband is a pharmaceutical rep. He literally is like on the other side of the country every month.
Yeah, all over the place.
Like, they're never home. So the life vest is it's a guarantee because she's probably by herself a lot.
Yeah.
She's probably a lot.
I think he was local pharmaceutical rep, but or salesman. But yeah, so they're just trying to get a hold of him because, like I said, there's no cell phones, like 1997.
God, yeah.
Like, no, you gotta find him when he's at work or at a diner that, you know, he's gonna stop at for lunch or something.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So crime scene investigator Lisa Lanham, goes into the house and I can't even imagine going in there. And she describes this horrific scene. She says, here are my legs going out. I'm all covered in goosebumps. Small bloody footprints were all around her body. And so they were obviously trying to get mommy to wake up. And I just want to cry. Okay, I'm going to keep going. So the blood trail was followed all the way to the laundry room. So they go into the laundry room. And this is where they see the attack must have started in the laundry room. And so they find a knife on the floor, a bullet hole in the wall, and a fingerprint on the dryer. So the print is questionable if it's even related to the crime, because it's not like a bloody fingerprint. It's just an out of place. This isn't her fingerprint. It's like
not
it's
the baby's.
Just, yeah, it's a fingerprint that we got to take and see if it's related to the case at all. So Detective Chris Iorio was on the scene searching, you know, the rest of the house, and he finds a shell casing from a 45 caliber pistol. And this is the same caliber that shot at Sheila's face. So she got shot in the face with a 45 caliber pistol. Jeez. It went through her face at her cheekbone and exited through the back of her neck, traveled through the dining room wall into the bedroom, hit a mirror, and it was found in a wall in the bedroom. So this was like
a crazy shot.
Yes. This gunshot did not kill her. You would think getting shot in the face.
What did I just say? We were just talking about that the last episode. I was like, you can have a whole pipe go through your head and be conscious and fine.
It's so the last I'm like, this is crazy how similar a lot of cases are. But yeah, so a nice pick through the eye is not going to kill you. Just like a shot through the cheek, but through the face. It did not kill her. This is then when they realize her killer grabbed a knife from the knife rack in the kitchen and went after her. And her knife rack was like one of those magnetic ones, like on the wall where it's just knives are stuck up there. I'm sure like high enough where like 2 year olds can't get it. So the blood spatter analysis, as well as all the defensive wounds all over her hands and arms, show that she put up a fight. So the gunshot did not kill her. He comes after her with the knife and she's fighting.
Damn.
And so
she's fighting for those babies.
Exactly.
You know?
Detective Iorio was like a parent, and he was saying that he could tell she was not only fighting for her own life, but for those babies. I know.
Why you do this to us?
Sorry. I have permanent goosebumps and I have tears in my eyes, and I got to just get through it because I cried after I typed this up. So, yeah, she was fighting for her baby's lives. I can't even imagine in that moment. Like, you're going to kill me. Please don't kill my baby.
Exactly, because she has no idea if this person is going to do that the same.
Mm-hmm. So he was saying that he knew she was fighting for her children, not only for her own life, because he said a lot of people who get shot in the face with a 45 don't get back up. She hopped back up and was fighting back.
The kind of adrenaline you need to protect your child, like those women who've literally lifted up cars to get trapped.
Yes, so she's shot in the face, bleeding, and she's fighting off an attacker in her home with a knife. And so, unfortunately, her attacker overpowered her and slit her throat 2 times. And her artery was not cut, but 2 veins were. So she's still bleeding profusely, and she's shot in the face. Her attacker then fled the scene and left her for dead. However, she was still not dead, and she was trying her best to survive. Yeah. She crawled, so the blood leading from there to the kitchen was her crawling to get to the phone. I'm going to cry. She climbed herself up on the counter to get the receiver. She had just lost too much blood, and she couldn't make a phone call to 911. This counter was 15 feet away. She's crawling, bleeding out 15 feet to get the phone receiver. I can't even imagine what her babies were doing at this time. And
right, because that type of thing is not going to be quiet.
No, a gunshot and a knife attack.
Absolutely.
Screaming.
And it's like any, you know, little kids, any tiny noise that startles them. Not everyone, but most of them are going to start crying.
Yelling. So she got the receiver but could not make the 911 call. So a little bit about Sheila. She was a stay-at-home mom to the quadruplets, and she had 2 daughters from a previous marriage, and they had only lived in this house for 6 weeks when this happened. They'd only been there 6 weeks. So detectives are now wondering, like, why would this happen to her? A stay-at-home mom of quadruplets and 2 other children, you know, 6 children. And so they search around the house to see if maybe it was a home invasion, but there's no signs of forced entry. So then they're wondering if possibly she knew the person that killed her. Now, I'm like, I get this is where detectives go all the time.
Yeah.
But just because there's no sign of forced entry doesn't mean that, like, she could have known the person that killed her. I mean, you and Lenore are like my personal Kramer and just like, hey, like, bust through my front door of like, or like, I'm locked out. Let me in. And yeah. So it's like, it's constantly, and I'm the same over there. I just walk into your house and, like, you know, oh, if hey, it's unlocked. Yeah. Or if then it's unlocked, I'm like, what are you doing? Yeah. I'm like, what are you doing with your door locked? So it's like, we walk into each other's houses all the time if it's unlocked.
Right. Or like someone could have been at the door and the kid's getting into something and she turned around for 1 second and they just walked in behind her. That doesn't have to be a break the door open situation. No,
it could have been, yeah, she was busy maybe getting them inside, going outside to water the plants or whatever and just left a door open. So it doesn't mean, you know, that she knew her attacker. But she, here's the thing is, like, she lived in a really nice middle class neighborhood. So I'm sure she did not have her house locked up like Fort Knox on a daily basis. Yeah. I'm sure she did with the little ones and you don't want them to go outside and get in the pool. But in general, say you're going in and out of the house, like, you know, it's, you're going to have a door unlocked. Anyway, so detectives still need to look into the possibility that either she knew the killer or the killer had knowledge of her house and the layout. So it's interesting because FBI statistics show that 2 out of 3 violent crimes against women are committed by someone that they know. Mm-hmm. So 2 out of 3 crimes, violent crimes.
Yeah.
I hate that statistic so much, especially the one that, like, the number one cause of death in pregnant women is men.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still thinking maybe she knew this person. So detectives begin to look into Sheila's background to see if they can find anyone who could be a suspect. Carl Glenn was a close friend of hers, so they decide to go and talk and see if they can get any insight about, you know, who she is, who she was, or, you know, who she was and what her life was about. So they find out a little bit about her past. Her father was an Air Force pilot, and he had been killed in North Vietnam. So after graduating high school, she became a secretary at a law firm in Salem, Oregon. And this is where she met one of the law firm's clients, Alan Blackthorne. That's a cool name. They fell in love quickly. And on their third date, they got engaged. Third date. 3 months after that, in 1983, they got married. So, yeah, very fast. So in the first few years of their marriage, they had 2 daughters, Stevie and Daryl. So imagine you're married, you get together within less than 4 years of knowing this person, you're married and have 2 children.
Yeah.
2 daughters. Her husband, Alan, created a medical device company that was, like, hugely successful. And so he became a multimillionaire. But their marriage, of course, did not last long. And they divorced in 1987 after only 4 years of marriage. Mm. So get married, couple kids, divorce. Through all of this, Sheila was working a full-time job. Yeah. And she was trying to raise these 2 young girls. So then in 1992, you know, some time has passed. She divorced in 1987. So, you know, a few years later, 1992, she's on a flight. And that's where she meets Jamie Bellish. And they got married the very next year. And they settled down in San Antonio, Texas. She moves fast, but I guess when the heart knows, the heart knows.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So they get married and it says the next year. So 1993, I'm sure they get married. And then they decide they want to have children together, but have a little bit of issues. So they decide to do IVF.
That's where the 4 came from.
Yeah, IVF, which is in vitro fertilization. It's just basically you're taking... for those who may not know, I'm sure most people know what in vitro fertilization is. It's you're taking the husband's sperm, the woman's eggs, and in a lab, putting them together to create the embryos, and then you're putting those into a woman's fertile uterus and hope that some of those embryos will stick to the lining and be a successful pregnancy. Don't know how many they put in, but they ended up with quadruplets. So I'm sure if they put in 4 and all 4 stuck, then all 4 stuck. So she's pregnant with quadruplets. So this is, like, big news to local media in San Antonio, Texas. And so the local media covered the birth. It's, like, it's so cute. You could see them, like, I think the babies are, like, maybe a year old at this point, and you see them all crawling around, and it's the two of them just talking about, like, life with quadruplets, you know, like, whoa, we weren't expecting this, you know, she already has 2 kids, and then it's like, we just wanted one, and then woohoo, we got 4, you know. So out of these quadruplets, there's 3 boys and a girl, which I think is kind of cool because she already had 2 girls, so now they have 6 kids, 3 boys, 3 girls.
That is funny.
I
know,
I like, that's even cute. I got 2 boys, 2 girls, so I'm like, I'm good, I'm done. So I'm sure after the 4 they're like, we're good, we're done. So Sheila stopped working so that she could be a stay-at-home mom to the quadruplets and her two older daughters. Do not blame her. I know my aunt did the same thing after she had twins. It's like, you can't just go to work. If I get it, if it's like one baby, it's a little easier, but twins and multiples and any number are a lot harder than just having a baby.
Yeah.
So she becomes a stay-at-home mom, and her husband, James, you know, they call him James, Jimmy, or Jamie. Sorry, Jamie, not Jimmy.
Isn't that funny? The same name, two different nicknames.
No. So he got a promotion at work, and then they all relocated to Sarasota, Florida. And that is where this
my story happened. Was in Florida.
I know. I was going to say something, but I didn't want to because I like. Because
we never talk about this. And so many times they've just been like.
Yes. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, Jimmy, Florida. Florida. It's all the same. We don't talk about our cases at all. And I almost wanted to say, oh, my gosh, mine, too. Oh, my gosh, mine, too. No. So this, like I said, they moved to Sarasota, Florida. Sorry. And that's where the murder occurred at their home in Sarasota, Florida. So, I'm sorry. I'm like, I lost my spot. That's okay. So they relocate from San Antonio, Texas to Sarasota, Florida. And then this, as we know, after 6 weeks of living there, Sheila is murdered in their home. So of course, husband is the first person that detectives are going to look at. So they decide to look at Jamie's finances and they find that he had life insurance policies on Sheila. Mm-hmm. Not that uncommon. No. I mean, not that I have a life, but he's the one making the money. He's the one that, like, we've got four kids together. If something happens to her, what am I going to do? I don't blame anybody who gets life insurance unless you have, like, 10 life insurance policies and they're all, like, $1 million each or something crazy. It's, like, suspicious. I think he's just, like, I don't know how many life insurance policies he had, but, like I said, they have six kids to care for. If something happens to her, what's he gonna do? How's he, you know? So anyways, they question him in order to try to establish an alibi. He had a partial alibi for the time of the murder, in the sense of he had multiple appointments on his sales route. He has receipts as well as witnesses to say where he was. He was here on lunch. Like, he wasn't at home. He was going from this appointment to this appointment. He did this for lunch. Then he was here and here.
Couldn't have even made it happen in the 10-minute break.
No. Like, yeah. No. And he's, like, on another. So, it's like, okay, he's not really, you know. So, when he's being questioned, he tells detectives to look into the former pool maintenance man. He says that the pool guy made them a little uneasy whenever he was around. I mean, you know, kind of creepy, I guess. And so they decide to go ahead and talk to the pool man and they ask him for hair, blood, DNA. He's like, sure, whatever. And because of this, he's ruled out as a suspect. He was just the creepy pool guy. So the only other suspect that they had in this case was Sheila's ex-husband, Alan. And so at this time of the murder, he was in San Antonio. So he was kind of ruled out as a person who killed her because it's like, well, he's in a whole other state. When this happened, he didn't kill her. So then they asked neighbors and workers, like gardeners and stuff, if they saw, like, anything on the day of the murder. One person did. Jake Mast was, like, a local gardener, and he was working on mowing a yard, and he said he saw a suspicious vehicle. And he said that, like, as working, you know, in neighborhoods as a gardener in these, like, nice neighborhoods, he always made it a point to, like, wave at everybody and be friendly because he said, like, you never really know if, like, they're going to end up hiring him, you know, and they're going to be the next, you know, client.
Yeah.
So, really smart plan. Like, be friendly. It's like, oh, that one gardener guy that's always waving at me. Let's go see how much he would charge to do our lawn, you know. So he's, you know, he said this person drives by and he waves and the person in the car didn't do anything. Didn't even acknowledge him. And so he's like, like, that's not common, I guess, in that, like, little suburbia neighborhood. You kind of don't really get a lot of people that don't live there or, you know, just, you know, it might, you know, might be a worker or something, but he just thought it was just weird. So, he goes along mowing, and a little while later, he notices this car again.
Oh.
And it's a Mitsubishi.
There you go.
Eclipse. And the driver gets out and he notices.
Those cars were really cute. Do you remember those back in the day? They were like
fucking ugly.
Really? Yes. That is hilarious. This is ugly. They were like the shit.
This one was ugly.
That's so funny.
Yeah. They show the crime scene photos. Of the, yeah. So the driver, he says, he notices the driver gets out and he's wearing like camo pants. And so he's like, okay. And he made note that this person was like a little out of place, like I said, in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Like, what is he doing here? So he decided to look at the license plate number and memorize it by making a sentence out of it.
Genius.
The sentence is, yes, Bob, run 62 girls. YBR.
Bob's a pimp.
Yeah. YBR62G. Perfect. Yes, Bob, run 62 girls. It's just like you make a stupid little phrase and you're going to remember that. Mm-hmm. And you remember, oh, it's a white crappy Mitsubishi Eclipse.
Yeah.
So he said he can't remember the state on the license plate, but he did notice it had a white background.
Okay.
So detectives run this plate through the Florida database, don't come up with anything. So they knew the family had just moved to Florida from Texas, so they did a search in the Texas database. And they get a hit on a white Mitsubishi Eclipse, just as described by Jake, the gardener. Mm-hmm. And they now had a new suspect. 23-year-old Jose Del Toro. Now, in the thing I watched, they sometimes called him Joey. So I don't know if he went by Jose, Joey. Mm-hmm. It's really weird. It's like written as Jose. So I'm just going to say Jose because I think that's his legal name. So Jose Del Toro. He had a minor drug conviction. So his prints were in the system. He was in the system.
Mm-hmm.
And so the prints for that conviction were sent to be compared to the print recovered from that the one dryer. Well, it wasn't bloody. It was just the one fingerprint. So they're like, let's go and send this off. Let's just see if he has anything to do with this.
Okay.
So during this time, as they're waiting on that, detectives are trying to find him, but he's like nowhere to be found.
Of course.
They finally find his car and they get a warrant to search it. Inside his car, they find camouflage pants.
Oh.
A map to Sheila's house.
Ooh.
More camouflage clothing, as well as what they believe to be the murder weapon, the 45 caliber pistol.
Oh, yeah. Snap.
So everything is sent to the lab to be analyzed, and the pistol is a match to the one that was used to kill Sheila. That's the murder weapon. That's the gun. So there was also blood spatter on his pants, and that blood matched Sheila's DNA. Mm. So they knew this has to be our guy. And then there was a fingerprint on the trigger of the pistol, because then, you know, you got to take it a step further, because you could just be like, oh, well, I had, like, I don't know, someone borrowed my car. Like,
someone stole my,
Yeah, and it's like, well, there's a, so they had found a fingerprint on the trigger of the pistol. It's his. Mm-hmm. So he pulled the trigger of that gun.
Yeah.
So then, of course, the fingerprint on the trigger of the pistol, his fingerprints, you know, all of it, it matched the fingerprint on the dryer.
Mm-hmm.
So he was in that house. He cannot say he was not. He can't say, oh, well, yeah, I shot the gun, but then somebody took it. Your fingerprints, you live in San Antonio, or you live in Texas, and your fingerprint is in Sarasota, Florida, on a dryer of a murdered woman, and her blood is in your car.
Yeah.
You know, so they know. This is our guy. Mm-hmm. We got him. So he had traveled by car from Texas to Florida to kill Sheila.
But why?
There was no connection he had to Sheila. So they're like, why is he driving?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, at all. They're like, there's what? He has no connection. No mutual, you know, it's like contacts, anything.
Weird.
So while they're connecting all this evidence to Jose Del Toro, detectives are then notified he fled the country to Mexico. Yeah. So they now have to just hope that he can be captured by Mexican authorities and extradited back to the state. So meanwhile, they get a tip saying, if you want to find him, look for his son, his cousin, Sammy Gonzalez. 27-year-old Sammy Gonzalez works part-time at a San Antonio golf course. So they decide to go and talk to him, and they just start talking about all the evidence that they have against his cousin Jose. Like, there's blood in his car, there's a pistol, there's, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, initially, he's like, lies. And then he finally starts giving them information after talking for a little while.
Mm-hmm.
He says that a hit was put out on Sheila for cash.
What?
Yeah. And he says that he was approached by someone named Danny Rocha, who was a bookie on the golf course. So this is all happening. So remember, this guy, Sammy, works at the golf course. Danny Rocha also works at the golf course.
Mm-hmm.
He's a bookie.
Okay.
And he says that, so Sammy's telling him that Danny Rocha showed him a picture of Sheila Bellish and was told that Sheila was a bad mother who needed to be punished. She needed to be punished. She's a bad mom. And so Sammy then says, like, well, I don't want to do it. And so mm-hmm. he instead said, I think I know someone who could do it. Oh. You know, my cousin Joey.
What a pal.
You know, Jose, Joey, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Joey can go rough her up. It started out as just rough her up. Mm-hmm. You know, she needs to be taught a lesson. That's a long way
to travel to just beat someone up because they think they're a quote unquote bad mom. Mm-hmm. Weird.
So then he said that Danny Rocha eventually said after a while of, okay, it doesn't really matter if like she's just beaten up. It, like she could be killed and it's fine.
Oh,
yeah.
Just that's okay.
So Danny Rocha gave him a picture of Sheila, a map to her house, and promised to pay him $10,000. So detectives know that in order to put anyone away for her murder, they need to get Jose Del Toro first. He's the guy that did it. Thankfully, Mexican authorities capture Jose, but they're a little hesitant to send him back to the States because of the death penalty. So this is when detectives turn to the FBI for help. They're like, we need your help. We need this guy back in the States. So this is when it was determined that the charges against all of the people, you know, you got Jose, you've got this Danny guy, Sammy, you know, conspiring to kill Sheila. These are all crossing state lines. So it is... they could be charged through the federal system.
Gotcha. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So it's not just like local state. It's, well, they're crossing state lines. It's federal.
Yeah.
So this is then when the FBI begins to pressure Mexican police and they finally agree to extradite Del Toro back to the United States. And once he's back in the States and he's questioned, he admits he killed Sheila.
Yeah.
But he also tells them something else. There's another person that is involved in all of this. And he said he's afraid of this person. So in this interrogation, I'm going to quote what he said. Okay. So this is Del Toro talking. Mm-hmm. He says, quote, I was debating whether or not to do it. You know, in my mind, this man who ordered this obviously is of means. And if this does not get done and if I don't do it, then something might happen to me or maybe even to my family because of this guy.
Oh, wow.
So he's scared of whoever it is who originally put out this hit.
Yeah.
So detectives now know that there is someone else. Got to be the mastermind who ordered this hit on Sheila. Mm-hmm. So it's determined that Danny Rocha, the bookie, agreed to participate.
This is insane.
I know. He had agreed to participate in all of this because he's trying to get funding for a sports bar. He wanted to get up and running.
$10,000 is not even enough. No, it's not. That's ridiculous.
So the funding was going to come from, any guesses?
Her husband?
Her ex-husband. Alan Blackthorne. Her ex-husband. So at this time,
give a shit.
Alan Black, yes, her ex. She has two kids with him, but and this is like way after she's remarried. She's got quadruplets. Mm-hmm. You know, she's in a different state.
She's moved on.
Yeah. So at this time, Blackthorne is worth $40 million. And
her ex-husband?
Her ex-husband, Alan Blackthorne, the father of her two children, the one she married and then divorced after 4 years. So he is also a member of the local country club. And get this. He's remarried and has two sons. Oh, okay. So he's like moved on with his life.
Yeah.
But apparently not that much. So
that is so weird.
This is when it gets really weird. As if it could get weirder. So detectives start talking to family and friends of his. And they find out he had this like whole secret life.
Oh, weird.
Okay, so Alan was originally born with the name Alan William Van Hoot. So that's his name. He's Alan Van Hoot. He had told people, you know, friends and stuff, that he had been abused when he was younger. And he told some people that, like, his mother set him on fire. Oh. There's no concrete evidence of this. Mm-hmm. And in 1973, Alan was only 17 years old, and he married his first wife. And then he joined the army at 17. Mm-hmm. Didn't last long. When his wife told him that she was pregnant, he kicked her so bad that she was convinced that he hurt the baby, so she went and got an abortion. I'm sure he just beat the shit out of her. I don't know.
Yeah.
For that, for you to take that measures of like, this baby's going to be destroyed, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So after that, she divorced him in 1978. And because she was so afraid of him and afraid for her life, she went into hiding.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So just like disappeared. His second marriage ended after 3 years. And then, of course, she was like saying he was abusive. Mm-hmm. And so it was through this divorce from his second wife That's when he met Sheila, because he was going in. Remember, she worked at a law office.
Oh, yeah.
He was going in to meet with his divorce attorney. Okay. And that's when he met Sheila. So I think he was finalizing up his divorce.
Yeah.
Met Sheila, married her.
Very quickly.
Very quick. What, 3 months later?
Uh-huh.
Probably finalized divorce papers in the next week. Who knows? But yeah, so that's how he met Sheila. So it was at this time that Alan changed his last name from Van Hoot to Blackthorne. And he got this name, Blackthorne, from a novel, Shogun, where the main character's name was John Blackthorne.
Oh, okay.
So he just was like,
so it cool wasn't name. Even his cool nope. original name. Nope. What
Not,
a turd.
He just didn't like the last name Van Hoot. So he's Alan Blackthorne. He also
probably didn't want people, that woman going around saying, this guy is terrible.
Yeah, so he's going to get remarried. He's changed his last name. So anyway, so he starts becoming successful and he has like all this money and, you know, he's married to Sheila. And he, of course, is abusive to Sheila when they're married. And remember, they were only married 4 years. So this is very early. Mm-hmm. And he's abusive towards her. And he also liked to meet up with prostitutes. You know, this business guy got all this money. Gonna meet up with some prostitutes. Well, now they're sex workers, you know, but they were called that then. Mm-hmm. And when this notes were, you know, all the articles and stuff. So anyways, not only would he meet up with them, he would bring them home. And Sheila's home.
That's like another level of disrespect.
And not only would he bring them home, he would tell Sheila to sit there and watch him have sex with them. Yeah, that's the level of abuse. Not only that, he would also bring men home and make Sheila have sex with them while he sat there and watched. Yeah, he's...
Good old cuckold.
It's disgusting. Like, he's just... I feel so bad. Gross. Yeah. So it also came to light that Alan liked to play cross-dressing games, but not just like, would he cross-dress? He would play this game where he would dress up as Little Bo Peep, and he would like go out. I don't know if he would get like intoxicated, and it was all this part of a game where he would go out and he'd like wander around, and then he'd have to be helped home and bathed. So he,
by her?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like a level, like he liked it, was it and was humiliating for her because she had to go out in public and like handle this situation.
Yeah. So it was a way to humiliate her on so many levels.
Yeah, which is like, if you're two consenting adults that want to do that, that's totally cool. But it was abuse. She is being
I'm sure
forced
she was not like, yeah, exactly. I don't want to sleep with this guy you're bringing home.
Exactly.
I don't want to watch you have sex with her. I don't want to go and get my husband who's dressed up as Little Bo Peep and bring him home and then sponge bathe you. Like, it's all humiliate. I think it was a way to humiliate her. So
he's a masochist.
Yes. And so he would also refuse to give her food if she gained any weight. Anyway, so she's this whole time she's living with all this physical, emotional, sexual abuse. And she was like, I'm done. She filed for divorce in 1987 and fought for custody. So this was 4 years. Imagine 4 years of your life. And you, in those 4 years, all of this is happening. And you're also birthing two children pregnant. I don't know if this happened when she was pregnant. I'm sure it did.
I'm sure it didn't stop.
Yeah, so 4 years, two children, and so divorced in 1987, fighting for custody. And this, of course, wasn't a cut-dry thing. He had a lot of money. This battle lasted 10 years. 10 years.
So the kids were, like, almost
1987, yes.
Like, age of needing to fight for them.
Well, they're, think Stevie is 13. So, yeah, they're little because 4 years in the marriage, they're babies. They're probably one and two at the time, probably when they get married, or two and three. Who knows? Divorce. It goes on for 10 years. So he just wanted to control her, obviously. Right. Through
it's more financial abuse because the lawyer fees are going to add up.
Oh, yeah. Keep adding. And
does it say where he got money from?
Or is that, he made all his money from his medical device company.
Okay.
Yeah. So remember, he became like a millionaire. He was worth like $40 million. Yeah. He has all this money and he's successful. And so he's got the money and she doesn't. And so he's just trying to make her miserable, trying to get to her through their daughters. And so now he is 44. He retired. He's got millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And he quickly had a new obsession other than work. That's golf.
Oh.
So. So okay. Danny Rocha is the bookie at the golf course, and this,
can you imagine hardcore betting on golfing? Get the fuck
well
out of here.
It really was, because Danny Rocha played a part in Alan gambling away a lot of his money playing golf. Apparently
$40 million of
I don't think it was all 40. But I'm sure, like, it was a lot.
Even have that much to be able to lose on something as dumb as that.
Yes, and then still try to do this whole custody thing with your ex.
Like, I went to the stock market and I really lost. It's like, I played a golf.
I played a bad game.
I was hitting a ball with a stick in my cute pants.
Yeah, seriously. And he gambled a lot of this money away. No shame about golfing,
but don't lose millions of dollars.
No, I mean, my stepdad golfs all the time and he doesn't lose money on golf. Like, you go for fun. So
right, it's like winner buys the next drink or something. Yeah. Like, what the hell?
Or you pay for lunch this time or, you know, something like that. So, but apparently he was known to not be really good. So people knew to, like, come and like, oh, like, you know, and he'd, you know, match them or whatever, and he'd lose.
My gosh.
So they just come to, like, beat him. And so this is why he gambled away so much money. He's just an idiot.
Proudful, did not want to lose.
Yeah.
Kept going.
So once Sheila got married to Jamie and had the quadruplets, Alan really started going after her in court, claiming she was physically abusing their daughters. He just didn't like
the
she was
moving
on.
The two older ones, not the babies.
Yeah, because they have two kids together. Yeah. And so then she's remarried, has quadruplets, and he's like, oh, she's abusive, blah, blah, blah. So he's like really trying to manipulate.
She's happy and definitely moving on.
Yeah. And so he's like really trying to get to her.
I'm so sorry. What? She probably had pregnancy difficulties from all of the abuse.
Probably.
Because if you get an STD, an STI, they can affect, like, your sexual health.
It could be that
the stress of all of that.
Stress can play a huge part in fertility.
Every single part of your body.
So if she's remarried and he's really going after her and doing this whole custody thing.
Yeah, she's probably so stressed out.
Yeah, I would be too. So, he's, like, really going after her, saying, you know, telling everyone she's abusive. She, you know, abuses the kids. But then in 1997, he suddenly drops everything. And the reason being, it's hurting the girls. It's been 10 years.
It's so normal, it's like, for them. It's just like another day for mom and dad to be at court.
Yeah. So friends of Sheila said that she told them she was worried that because he dropped all this, he's up to something.
Mm, he was.
And so that's when they decide to move to Florida suddenly. So it wasn't so much that her husband got a promotion. I think that's just like, oh, you got a promotion, we're leaving.
Like, for sure, we're not even going to think about it.
He probably was like, oh, yes, I have a connection out here. Let's just go. And so they immediately just, like, got up and moved. So after this is when Alan approached Danny about Sheila. Danny then went to Sammy, who then went to Jose. So it's this whole, these four men all connected. The one mastermind is her ex-husband, Alan. And he just knows that Danny can just make it happen because he's a bookie. He knows people and, like, you know, it's just
dirtbags know people in low places.
So they know they got everyone. So they've got Sammy. They've got Jose. You know, they've got Danny, Sammy, Jose, all them. So
yeah,
January 2000, Sammy Gonzalez. Remember, he's the cousin. Mm-hmm. He's like the third man. If you picture an order, he's the third one in the ring. Yeah. He's the one who was told to do it. And he's like, no, I'll tell my cousin to do it. So he pleads guilty in coordinating the killing. And he's given a 19-year sentence. Danny Rocha, the bookie, his testimony was crucial in capturing and convicting Alan Blackthorne.
Let's see what he got.
He got life in prison.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the bookie got life in prison because he's the one that had the picture, the map, because Alan could have just talked to Danny, but Danny's the one that got the ball rolling. Of like, here, I'll, like, hand out the picture. The here's the map. Here's you. I know the guy that can do it. So Danny,
right. He could have given him a fake map, a fake picture. He could have done something
like,
else.
Oh, I told him, but like, I don't know what happened. Yeah. So, at this time, Jose Del Toro is still waiting for trial. And since Alan Blackthorne conspired to commit the murder in Texas, and the crime was carried out in Florida, like we said, it's considered an interstate crime. They're able to bring up federal charges. Two things that the FBI had to bring against him was the use of interstate communication facilities in the furtherance of a crime, and then interstate travel to commit domestic violence.
That's crazy.
So, yeah, if you travel across state lines and commit crime across state lines, it is federal. Mm-hmm. So just know that. If you're going to commit a crime, don't be stupid and do a stupid federal crime. But, yeah, these guys are kind of stupid, but very stupid. So on January 5th, 2000.
For $10,000?
I know.
I mean, obviously, I wouldn't kill someone for $1 million, but I'm like, what?
And the guy, I don't know how much he had left, but he had a net worth of $40 million. I get he probably like gambled half of his fortune away, but it's like $10,000.
What a chintzy bitch.
Yeah, $10,000 is what he.
It's terrible. It's not funny. It's just so fucking gross.
That's the price he put on her. Ugh. Yeah. I don't know if that's. So I don't know if Danny, obviously he must have been getting a cut. I don't know if that's just what Danny said, like, oh, here, I'll pay you this.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. Danny could have gotten like $100,000 and then he's like,
oh, he's the one who found something.
Yeah. So on January 5th, 2000, FBI agents arrest Alan Blackthorne on a golf course. Yeah. So hard evidence still needs to be found. In order for the charges to stick, because it's just like hearsay of, oh, he told me this. He told me this.
Exactly.
It's like, well, we need to know that he actually did. Do you have proof that like he gave you this stuff?
A
he,
text,
you know,
a note.
Exactly.
Anything.
So they get a search warrant to look through his house. And the evidence they found was a map finder guide and a printed out page showing Sheila's address in Sarasota, Florida. They also find photos of Sheila and her daughter, and the print that was missing was the one that was given to Danny Rocha. Because think, 1997, you got your, you know how you would get your negatives and then you'd get all your photos in order, and there's one missing out of this envelope of photos, and it's the one that they had. Mm-hmm. That this was the one from the here, take this picture. It was of his ex-wife at her daughter's like birthday party.
Uh-huh.
And it was just a picture of her. So like they know.
From his own photo.
Yes.
Yeah, back in the day, kiddos, when we had to take our pictures.
Yes.
And get disposable them turned camera. In and wait a day. Now it was like an hour, and it comes in a funny little envelope.
Yeah, it comes in an envelope, and most times you get your negatives. That way you could take your negatives in and get more prints of it if you need. Yeah. So they can see the negatives, all the photos, and one's missing. And it's the one that the quote-unquote hitman had.
Yeah.
So that's kind of proof it connects. It's from the same, you know, kind of hard to say, oh, it's just a coincidence. No.
Yeah, okay.
So they have enough evidence, obviously. Mm-hmm. It's he did this. He's got the map. He's the picture. It's all lining up. So Jose Del Toro pleads guilty to first-degree murder, and he agrees to tell detectives what happened. Remember, Jose's the one that committed the crime. He's the one that pulled the trigger and stabbed her and, you know, or slit her throat. So he said that on the morning of November 7th, 1997, he got to the house after driving all night from Texas. He parked and waited. He said he saw Sheila leave the house. So he goes in. So she must have left like a door open or unlocked. Mm-hmm. Sheila had that morning when she had left to take her two older daughters to school. And then he said that she came home. And he just kind of sat and watched her for about an hour to see if she mistreated her kids. Because remember, she's a bad mom. She's abusing her children. She needs to be taught a lesson, either rough her up or kill her. He's like, well, let me make sure she's a piece of shit like they're saying she is before I commit murder.
Uh-huh.
So he's sitting there for about an hour in the laundry room and he's watching her, seeing if she's mistreating her kids.
What a pal.
Yeah. So he said that he didn't really see anything, so he's like, I'm just gonna go. And he's about to leave, and then Sheila notices that the door was open leading from the laundry room to the garage.
Mm-hmm.
So she's like, why is that open? And that is then when they make eye contact, because he's in the laundry room, and he said there was no turning back. No turning back. She's like, I'm so sorry. I gotta go.
I'm drunk.
She doesn't know who you are.
Pretend to be drunk and like, stumble out. I'm so sorry.
I don't know how I got in here.
You obviously had the forethought to like.
My friend used to live here. I thought I would. No.
You had the forethought to like sit and watch her. Mm-hmm. It was not too late. You wanted to make sure she wasn't a bad person.
Yeah. So that is true or he just barged in and killed her, I don't know. But that is his story. He sat and looked, didn't see anything, was about to leave. She noticed him.
Mm-hmm.
No turning back. He shot her in the face. She jumped back up. And he grabbed a knife and started, you know, fought back. And so.
Dang.
But yeah. So he is sentenced to life in prison. So on trial.
So he didn't even get death.
No. Nope. He's just sentenced to life in prison, just like the bookie. Mm-hmm. So on trial, Alan is trying to maintain his innocence. He's claiming he knew nothing of the plot to kill Sheila. You know, I don't know. Which is
like, why would these guys want to kill this random lady this random two states away?
Yeah, that have a connection to you. And, you know, it's just...
It's such bullshit.
So, thankfully, the jury didn't buy it. And on July 6, 2000, he was found guilty. On that same exact day is when Del Toro was convicted and sentenced. Mm. So both of them were... Alan and Jose were both convicted. So, Alan Blackthorne was convicted of federal charges of interstate conspiracy to commit murder and interstate domestic violence, and he was sentenced to two concurrent life sentences without parole in a federal prison in Texas. So then...
They ain't easy there either.
No, especially in Texas.
Yeah.
So in 2001, so this is a year later, he was almost killed during a attack by a prison gang.
Womp, womp.
Yeah. And so after this, he was segregated from general population and transferred to a federal prison in Florida. Then, after 14 years of serving his sentence, on November 18th, 2014, at the federal prison in Terre Haute, Florida, Alan Blackthorne died. And no cause of death was released. So we don't know how he died. Natural causes or someone shanked him. We don't know.
Isn't it crazy? It's so unfair, the amount of people that like did not seem to have health issues to go to prison and then fucking die.
Yeah.
They don't even
like that one we just watched where she like was in prison for what, like 3 months or 6 months or something like that? And then she died.
Yep. The amount of people that go to prison.
And the trial
and
everything went on for like years and
Yep. And she had literally killed like children.
Yeah,
the one we watched.
Yeah, so yeah, so he died after. I mean, 2014, 2000. So yeah, 14 years of sentence. He died. Don't know why.
And he was still young. Like, I mean, not even 60.
He was 44.
No, that was counting. Like adding the time on.
Before so he retired. So 40, 50. 58? Yeah, he might be like 60. I don't. Wait, I think I said, nope, I did not say how old he was. Yeah, I did.
I think you did.
I think I read it. No, it says after 14 years of, no, I can't remember how old he was. I think it said.
You said
he was
44
when he retired.
Gotcha. Okay.
So I don't know the timeline between that. I could have gotten really into dates, but I'm like, this was already long enough.
I get it.
So yeah, so he died. The other two, life in prison. The other guy, Sammy, you know, got, what did I say, 19? Mm-hmm. Something like that. Let me double check. It was, 19. Yeah, Sammy got 19 because he was just like, he just told his cousin. He's like, I got the information, he passed along. But still, that's conspiring to commit murder.
Right.
So he got 19. Everyone else got life.
You could have literally just been Alan, like, no. But they're so afraid of this guy.
Yeah, they're afraid of Alan.
I understand. I totally understand that. There's still things you can do, though.
Yeah. So.
And the thing that I'm like, if you could murder somebody for $10,000, it ain't the first time he's done it. Mm-mm. Get the fuck out of here. Nobody's just like, yeah, sure. Who is that chill? Even if you're afraid of someone, you're gonna, a normal, average, mentally well person is gonna be like,
yeah, no.
Okay, sure. I'm going to the cops.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
They'll figure it out and move me to Oklahoma.
Yeah. Like, yeah, it just because someone has money, like Alan Black, he was just a business guy that had a bunch of money. He's not, I mean, I get it. He put out a hit on his ex-wife, who's not to say he could put out a hit on you, but yeah, so he is dead. The other two, life in prison. I think at this point, Sammy's probably out. I didn't look. I didn't really care. I'm like, they're all pieces of shit.
Yeah.
But Jamie Bellish moved to New Jersey with the quadruplets and one of Sheila's daughters. Her other daughter went to go live with relatives in Oregon, so he just kind of left Florida, left Texas behind, and just moved to New Jersey with five of the kids. You know, I just love the fact that like he was a dad to those girls, and he—I don't know which daughter. I don't know if it was, you know,
maybe the older daughter had plans for a college where that family lived, or something.
Maybe, so yeah. So, or she was just like, oh, I can't stand the quadruplets. Maybe. I don't know which daughter stayed with him, but yeah. So he's
the trauma of just being with them and knowing what the babies went through too has to be very hard.
But yeah. So that was really hard. I think because you know we're moms, and I'm mom. I mean, you're a mom of two, and I'm a mom of four, and a mom of even one. You can't even imagine your little baby.
No, the thing that I talk about all the time, like as much as nobody, like, you know, Most people are concerned of the feelings of passing away someday. I'm literally just like, please just let me pass away when the girls are like adults.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing I want. Just yeah. when they're adults and don't need me as much because they're adults.
Yeah.
And typically by then they have a partner, a child, something. Not that you don't ever need your parent, but like, please just through this part.
I just don't want them to be a little baby. They can't
understand. Like yeah, yeah. even a young kid is going to be like, this isn't fair. Like, this Lily. Is bullshit. Like, well, even like the girls age, Avery's oh, age, yeah. that age would be like, this is unfair. I hate this. I'm like, at least if yeah. they're older, that's the only thing I'm like, just please till I'm like, I have goosebumps. Well, I'm like, just till they're like 25 at least, please.
I know. Well, like I talked about earlier, my dad died when I was really young.
Yeah. And when you're little like that, the even if you're able to comprehend what that means, it adds a different element and layer to your life as a childhood that whether you want it to define you, it shapes you into what you're going to go mm-hmm. through. Because so much of childhood, that brain development and then something horrific and tragic happening in the middle, those toddlers don't know, but it's there. It's fucking there forever.
Yeah, yeah, that trauma of walking around and they had mm-hmm. their mom's blood on
and
them.
It sucks and because, like, you don't...
Even the trauma that those detectives, like, that one she just oh, yeah. saying, like, seeing those little baby footprints all around their mom. And mm-hmm. then you've got her blood, and oh, they're yeah. probably laying on her trying to... And that's what, like, got mm-hmm. my mom heart so bad. I'm like, like, my dad died in a car accident, and it was just... He was just gone. I didn't have mm-hmm. to see him after that. Like, I didn't... Mm-hmm. So it was different, but I knew, and yeah. I mean... Colin was still a baby and mm-hmm. Brad was like what I was eight
five
he was maybe. Four
so no, oh the month
he was almost he was yet. Almost five. Brad was four and Colin was 19 months old, I think. He was a baby, so
just about the same but, age as those babies.
Yeah, losing a parent is horrible, but losing a parent like that and then her poor daughter having to find her, that's just
like, oh my god. Yeah. Right. Who was just like a middle teenish?
Yeah, she's 13. Come home from school, and you're like, "Why are you all crying? What is happening?" That probably That's replays. I can't even
forever.
Imagine. Yeah,
forever.
Yeah, because this was in '97. She was 13, so like, I don't. Yeah. She's an adult now, but
it sucks because they you know they say that like we don't remember stuff from that age, but it consciously it's there.
I do.
Like I can remember little things from three. I have a really strange memory where I was just like. 18 months ish old. We had just like left Georgia and then had been here for a little while with my grandparents, and then we had been settled in Oregon. It was the very first house we lived in Oregon. It was somebody else's place that we always called the Tom Yeoman house because mm-hmm. that was the landlord's name, and it was a really cool house. And I have a memory, I don't even think there's a picture of it that exists, and I asked my mom, like, I have this weird memory of like being floor level and like nasty shag carpet and this weird wood paneling and like a TV on the floor.
Uh-huh.
My mom was like, what? And her and my sister both, it was like the floor level of me as a crawling around walking.
I remember you telling me this.
Baby yeah. near the ground. But it's like a still shot. It's like a frame mm-hmm. in my mind, like a picture. I don't have a memory of anything but a picture. And so, yeah, that was like under the age of two. And so, like, there's little things, especially a trauma, like, you're not going to remember that necessarily, but, like, the nightmares, the type of things mm-hmm. that they're going to have to deal with forever without even consciously being aware is so sad.
It is. And I'll show you a picture. Obviously, I'm going to post a picture of Sheila and Jamie with the quadruplets. Mm-hmm. And she's so pretty. Mm-hmm. She really is. And...
oh my god, babies. How funny is that? The two he's holding look like identical, but uh-huh. the two she's holding look identical, but they don't look identical to each other.
I didn't even
know. Like the same way. Yeah.
So I don't know now, if like they were
the facial structures of the two he has and then the two she's holding.
Oh yeah, yeah, I see it now. Yeah, they're so cute. I'm like, how old are they now? Because they're like as old as no. They are well, if they were born 95-ish.
2005, like 2025, they'd be 20 next year.
Yeah. Wow. So they're adults, right? Probably. 95, yeah.
95, 2005, 2020.
Because this picture, they're like about a year old because they were 20, they were 24 months. So they, December, I think, is their birthday.
Oh, okay. So they're 20. Yeah, yeah.
November, December, 97, they'd be two.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
So 97, yeah. So they're like adults now because I'm like, yeah, because Troy's going to be 17. And he was... 07. Oh wow. But yeah, so that was a hard one for me. I remember hearing about
oh my god, I skipped a whole decade. 2000 sorry
yeah
no 2005 no, no, 2015 is another decade. Yeah, they would be 31.
Yeah, because Beth and Brian.
My brain.
Wait, no, Beth and Brian. I missed a whole
more than multiple times. Y'all probably heard me going to 95, 2005.
Also, I'm not good with dates.
2005, and I went to 2025.
You skipped a year.
I did.
Yeah, they're so, adults yeah, now because I'm like
over 30 now.
Yeah, because almost. My twin cousins were born 94, 93, 95, and something like that.
Y'all can do the math.
97. I don't know.
They're 95, 6 or 7.
They're in their 20s. Yeah. One of my twin cousins haven't, him and his wife are having their first baby. Mm. So I'm like, oh my gosh, we're so old. We were just talking about that with something else, how old we are. What was it?
As always, we're old. We're just figuring, I don't know. The fact that children on TikTok refer to the year of our, the time of our birth as the 1900s.
Sorry.
Jeez. Get the fuck out of here.
No, what was it? Oh, I was talking about, was it the CDs? And I was showing you the Angus and Julia Stone. And I was talking to you about the CD when like Jack had made me a burn CD of mm-hmm. Angus and Julia Stone and drew pictures of them. And I still have it. It's like probably down there somewhere. Mm. And I was like, man, we're so old.
It is funny.
We like, had the CD case, mm-hmm. and how is that safer than like shuffling through your?
It's hilarious because like the thing that Kurt and I were just talking about, we were like looking at DVDs, and I was like, man, you know, I'm like one of the only people, him and I, that uh-huh. still buy them. I think like Loaf might, but it's funny because
you guys have like 3 bookshelf stuff.
Oh yeah, we own like 1,100. That's crazy. And it's funny though because like. The like Media Preservation Society is basically like, well, thanks to hoarders like you guys, that's why copies of things still exist sometimes. Uh-huh. Because like, you know, when the Universal Studios backlot caught on fire, I think we were like 18 or 19.
I can't remember.
Yeah. And because I was in Oregon and I remember watching it on the news and like being really upset because like one of their vaults had burned down and mm-hmm. the vault, because it was like the whole King Kong ride and stuff. And in the very, very back part, which is like part that you when you were on the tram ride, I think they'd be like, and over there is the vault.
Uh-huh.
And it was like the only negatives that exist of a lot and they are gone forever. Yeah. So if it wasn't for the person that like the stagehand that's like picking up all the negatives and uh-huh. hoarding them in their pocket or stealing them, all this nonsense is the only reason why something still exists. I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm gonna buy DVDs forever. I would get VHSs, but they take up so much room. But again, mm-hmm. like Kurt and I both were, you know, well, you have to own like every version because the art is different. Uh-huh. And as time has progressed, more and more of these pieces that come from the editing room mm-hmm. floor get found, and that's why Blu-rays have like 5 hours of extra content.
Yeah,
because sometimes that's fun to watch.
Yeah,
it wasn't when I was like 10, but it's interesting now.
Yeah, it's crazy how much time has changed from like that, because I was like, when we were trying to do the math with the birthdays, I'm like, yeah, because Beth and Brian were born like this year, and then like this was still a thing then, and
oh yeah.
And so even when you look at like crime scene photos, and I know like going back to episode number one with you know, Sherry Rasmussen being murdered and her house, and it was like the DVD players taken or whatever, CD players, and you're just like, man, that was a thing. And it's like, yeah, because it was the '90s.
And it was 80s big.
And 90s. Yeah.
My huge. God. They were so heavy.
So yeah, looking at, you know,
it is funny how much stuff has changed. Because I think back even to it,
just our childhood in the '90s.
I was one of the only kids that I knew of my friend group that had a VHS rewinder.
Yeah.
It was its own thing.
Yeah, we had the auto rewind.
Yeah, it was player. Like separate like that.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, it was magical.
I know.
You're like, I can still hear it. Like, click it. Oh, yeah, that's right. You used to live at
a video store,
a video rental store. You used to live
I used to work at a video rental store.
Okay, well, maybe other people VHS. Don't know.
That still had VHS, and part of my job was to tack on the charge to the people that were returned. I think it was like a $2 charge or something like that. I can't even remember. Because we had to get, it was under the counter. We had to put the VHS in. It was a single thing, and you just pop it in, and it was just for rewind.
Multiple?
No, we had the one. It was a family-owned small. It was like probably the size of my...
The front like room
the living room, dining room, and this bedroom combined. Yeah. That's it. That was the whole store. So
I love that. Wow, though. We kind of went off on a tangent. I love mom and pop shows.
Yeah,
everyone can tell when it ended.
Yeah,
you guys are always feel free to leave whenever you want to.
Yeah, we were just talking about the 90s.
Like a free mommies after hours, almost. Kind of.
Yeah, because we were talking about the 90s and dates and how old we were and stuff and.
fancy.
And
we old. We from the 1900s.
1900s. We're from 80s. We're the 80s, baby. We're from 80s.
We have from... purse. We from 80s.
We from 80s.
Oh, my God.
We have age. On our face.
I have birthday.
I have birthday soon.
You do.
When this comes out, my birthday is next week. Speaking of which, this is how we'll finish off, because this episode comes out the week before our 1 year anniversary. So
is this our
next episode
week is our
So when this comes out because this comes out on the 9th, I think, and so then the next
episode releasing for us, like, that everyone's gonna hear,
because
has already happened.
It'll okay, so we recorded the night. This comes out on the 16th, and on the 23rd will be the next one. But the 25th is our 1 year anniversary, and it is also my birthday. So we always remember our anniversary, and it just worked out that way because it was a Tuesday, and we decided Tuesday, so it was my birthday. But then now we have a leap year, and my birthday's on a Thursday. So
that's funny.
Yeah. So next week will be our 1 year, and we have something planned as a little bonus on our 1 year that we're going to do, just a little something. So you'll get your regular content next week on the week of our 1 year. And for those of you that have been here from the beginning, thank you.
Yeah,
and
we're
share.
Did we say it from the beginning, or did we record? We just got over just this morning from our last episode. Well, it already came out, so I don't want to say it anyway. Our 2,500 listens.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're at like 2,509.
Yeah, and we're doing it all from the ground up. We don't have a lot of networking. We don't have, like, you know, a lot of these podcasts, like, know someone who knows someone, and then they get, like, big in the first year.
I mean,
like,
most of my friends don't even listen, and that's totally fine. Everybody's busy. Yeah, it's like everyone's busy. So, like, all of this is just, like, what we have on Instagram, on Facebook, that, like, we share. And that, you know, people are finding us pretty organically right now, which is cool. So if you got this far with us, it's really important to, like, rate us
and share it.
But the ratings
end up
being...
It's free to share.
Exactly.
Share on on Facebook, share on Instagram, share on Twitter. Whatever you're on, share it, because it's free. It's just like, hey, this is a podcast I listen to. It's kind of cool. Like, give it a listen. And then we were talking about, over on Patreon, we are going to be revamping Patreon, starting to get more content up on there, because we haven't in a while, because it's just been a little busy working on some other stuff behind the scenes. But we have some fun things, like some decals that you could put on the back of your car or on your water bottle or whatever, that
we're
going to
do
scan.
A giveaway soon that'll come with your own Crimey.
Yep. And so we got a lot planned over on Patreon, and we'll announce more once that's rolling, because right now we just have some older content, and so we'll keep you all updated. But share,
yeah,
and rate us, and, you know, it kind of helps get the algorithm out for people who listen to this kind of content.
It can help push it up further in the category genre for them to find something else.
Yep. So thanks for everyone being here, and we'll, you know, see you next week on our 1 year week.
Oh my
our
gosh.
1 year week.
Yeah.
So with that, stay crafty
and not cry me.
Bye.